Yeah, my assistant machine gunner, he got wounded. He got shot through right through the top of the shoulder and went down under his shoulder blade and come out down below there. And somehow or another, he'd lost his first aid pack. And so I patched him up with mine, which they said, whatever you do, never use your first aid pack on somebody else, because you'll need it someday, you know, and you won't have one. Well, he didn't have one, so I used my first aid pack on him. Well, so he went on back then to the medics, you know, he went on back. And I was shooting in those caves to keep the Japanese from coming shooting back at us, you see. And everybody else had already gone. First thing I know, I realized that, well, here I am all by myself again. Mm-hmm. And now I've got to go up there past those caves. I've got to go past those caves to get up on that ridge up there where we're supposed to be. So I finally decided that I'd just tie a belt, empty machine gun belt. I tied it around that and just swung it to my hip, you know, and I'd just bar in those caves as I'd walk up that way, you know. Well, I got up there, and it's getting late already by that time, so I got up there, and we didn't have a foxhole dug because my assistant machine gunner got wounded and he had to come back, so didn't have nobody dig my foxhole for me. But another guy said, well, he would help me dig his foxhole, one that carried ammunition for him, you know. He'd help me dig a foxhole. We'd just both stay in that foxhole. Well, we just started to dig in there, and the artillery, the Japanese artillery spotted us there on that hillside, so they sent in some artillery, and, well, he got wounded in the back of the leg right there, so we just fell down again one another, and almost on top of one another, and he got the shrapnel in his leg, and how I wished that had been me, but it wasn't, mm-hmm. So. But anyway, so the medics came, and they took him back right quick, because he had to get him back before dark. Well, I started digging my foxhole, and I run in, got about down about 2 feet, you know, and run into a rock, you know, solid rock. So I just started digging it lengthways, you know. Thought I'd maybe find the end of that rock and go off of that. Well, I didn't. So I finally got out there long enough I could lay down in that foxhole. So I laid down in that foxhole, and it was beginning to get dark by that time, so it wasn't anything else for me to do but just lay down in that thing. So I just put my machine gun in there with me and laid down in the foxhole and put my poncho over top of me. And it rained that night. Water running in that thing, the foxhole. I had about a foot of water in there with me. But I survived the night. Mm-hmm. So that was all necessary. Mm-hmm. But I was sure glad to see the next day come, because mm-hmm. You just don't sleep any at all and mm-hmm. deal like that. And I didn't have any company.
Did they shoot at you anymore?
Huh?
Did they shoot at you anymore?
Yes. Later on, they sent in some more artillery.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering about whether they're going to be able to survive that. No deeper hole than what I had, you know.
Hmm.
But I survived that. So, but I did uncover my poncho, and I looked, and it just, like, them artillery shells are going off, just looked like fireworks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a thing I could do. Wasn't anything I could do at all. Mm-hmm. So I just laid there, and the next day come, and I got very little sleep all that whole 13 days. I recall the next morning when I got up, the Marines was coming up the hill on the other side to meet us. And we started walking down that ridge, and I don't know, of course, the next morning where the demolition guys come up and they blew them caves up, you know, blew them shut. But I don't recall what happened after that. I remember walking down the ridge, and it was on the next to the bay. I see there's some ships out there in the ocean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't recall anything what happened about that. I just wish I could. I know I got on a ship, you know, mm-hmm. LST, and I went to the Philippines from there.
Okay.
Yeah.
And but fighting was still going on in the Philippines.
Well, no, it wasn't quite, I might say, fighting. They'd all, the Japanese had left and run up in the hills,
mm-hmm.
but they were still guarding the cities to keep them from coming down and taking over any more city property there. But so we were getting, just going there to get a rest up for a little while before we went on Japan. We mm-hmm. were getting ready to go on Japan. And but I don't remember getting on the boat at all, but I remember before I got to the Philippines why. It come to me. I remember just seeing how beautiful the water looked and still it looked and everything. Mm-hmm. And So we unloaded there in the Philippines. They drove in there at night, and we stayed on the boat that night, and then we waited in the next day after the tide come up, you know. That's where I got my Bronze Star, because I volunteered to go up in the mountains and help take in prisoners. And but before I done that, I got transferred out of a rifle company into a motor pool.
Okay.
And so I drove a truck, and so I hauled prisoners down out of the hills. And
now, could I ask you some questions about?
Yeah.
Why did you volunteer?
Well, it was dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that nobody has to go,
mm-hmm.
but they wanted volunteers to go.
Mm-hmm.
But they said it was dangerous. You could risk, you know, could be life threatening to you. Because those Japanese, the reason, and that was after the war, after they dropped the bombs over in Japan,
yeah.
and they supposed to surrender, but a lot of them Japanese up in them hills, they don't know that, you see. Mm-hmm. And some of them would surrender, and they would send them back to tell them the others to come down, you see. Well, those Japanese, according to a lot of them, committed harakiri off of Okinawa, you know, and they mm-hmm. jumped off those cliffs and everything to keep them surrendering. And they're pretty tough to surrender, really. And so that's one reason that that you're risking your life to do that. But it was a job that had to be done,
mm-hmm.
and I'd said somebody's got to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I was a good shot, and if I had to.
They were up in the mountains, and then you'd have to drive up and then work your way up to where they were?
Well, they had a road going up the mountain, and that road kind of wound around. The mountain's pretty steep there in the Philippines. We went to Cebu, Philippines. Mm-hmm. And we got up there. Well, they had a building up there that that they met in there.
Oh.
And so as they come down, we would hold them in that, and as a prison camp,
mm-hmm.
until we got a load. And then when we got a truckload, by then I would take them down to the camp for the where the, we had another prison set up, but we just keep them in a small group there until we had truckloads, you know, mm-hmm. and then we'd haul them down.
Mm-hmm.
And but we would make them. I would, whenever I was on guard, you know, and if they come in, I would stop them off a little ways from me, 50 yards or so, you know, and I'd make them strip down all mm-hmm. the clothes and everything.
Now, how did you communicate to them?
We had an interpreter.
Oh.
We had an interpreter, but mm-hmm. he wasn't with us all the time. Mm-hmm. So part of the time, I'd just tell him, you know, I mean, just motion to him that, you know, you just stop right there and drop everything, you know, mm-hmm. clothes and all, you know, motion to him, take the clothes off and everything. And then we would examine their clothes, but sometimes you have to watch this, they're not booby trapped, you know, too. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But,
was that the most, the most traumatic or the thing that affected you most?
No, it wasn't. That 13 days of fighting is what affected me most. Through,
okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, that. But, you know, just the thought that's going up there and with the prisoners, you know, that you, and I don't know, people told me, said, well, you're stupid for going that. You already survived one, and we have people here that has never been fought anything at all, you know, and he said they need to be the one to go up there, but they need some experienced guys up there too, and they knew that, and that's mm-hmm. why they wanted some volunteers to go mm-hmm. along too. So
how many prisoners would there be as they came down the mountain in a group, like four or five, or
about four or five. Sometimes it's only be two, mm-hmm. you know, it's hard to tell. I think that some of them would stay back far enough away that they'd see what's going to happen to those before that they would surrender too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be some more come down.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get them loaded on a truck and go down the hill, you know, with them, well, they, of course, they didn't know what was going to happen to them, but then they would find out that we're not going to shoot them right on the spot, you know. So
mm-hmm.
so they'd be more surrender then. So.
Okay.
But
what did you think about that?
Well, you know, Well, I was glad, really. I was glad to get it over with.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to, you know, to get out of there so we'll go home, and I was glad to get it over with.
Mm-hmm.
And so after the time came, though, when we had to leave there, and so we were going into, we went into Japan as occupation duty, you know.
Oh.
And so we went into Hokkaido.
Mm-hmm.
And we went into town of Hakodate, Hokkaido.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a shipyard there, up there. And so we went there and taken a, took rifles and all the weapons and things that they had, and they turned them all in, and we were in charge of all of that.
Okay. Now, let me backtrack a little bit. Where were you when you heard about the bomb being dropped?
Well, I was in the hospital. Really, in the Philippines, on Cebu,
okay.
Cebu Island, in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
I had a wisdom tooth that the was bothering me, giving me some problems, and I went to the dentist, which was just a short short distance away there. Anyway, and he had it was kind of wedged in there, grew up in, from the bottom, and I guess it's up against the other teeth, and it wasn't coming through, and it was bothering me. And so he said, well, we'll just take that out. And so I said, okay. Of course, we didn't have any electricity.
Right.
No electricity. He had a treadle sewing machine that you, with a drill, you know.
And electricity? Did it make electricity?
Huh?
Was that what made it?
No, it didn't make electricity, but it's,
it powered it.
Powered the drill, you know, to turn it, you know, with a paddle, you know. So so he couldn't get it out. He finally had to drill a hole in it. And it's gruesome.
Yes.
And so he stuck a punch, I call it, in that hole and tried to pull it out with that. Well, my roots had gone down around my jawbone, you know, so he couldn't get it out that way. So he busted it in two, took a chisel and cut it in two, you know. My neck swollen up, started down to my shoulder, you know, up mm-hmm. black and blue. So the next morning, they sent me to the hospital. So mm-hmm. I went to the hospital down in Cebu, a city about 20 miles away. And I was in there when they dropped the bombs, and mm-hmm. They gave me penicillin shots, you know, to take care of that my infection. I guess it was infection there too, probably by that time. So, but anyway, I got over that. But I seen a lot of malaria there
mm-hmm.
in that island because the mosquitoes were bad. You know, we had to sleep under mosquito net all the time,
mm-hmm.
and they were bad. So mm-hmm. we stayed there and. Under that mosquito net, but I decided then that I'd take my atabrine tablets. They give us that to prevent malaria, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they stood in line, and with an MP there, and you taking those tablets, or you didn't eat, you know. If you ate, you go through that. You had to take those tablets. That's mm-hmm. prevent you from getting that.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the hospital, I seen enough of that malaria that I knew that I was going to take my atabrine tablets. So.
Mm-hmm.
That I didn't want that malaria because I seen the guys have that.
When you heard that the bomb was dropped, did you think that you would be going home soon then, or did you think about that?
Well, yes, I thought about it, but our general, he said, you guys have fought all this way over there, you know, that the company has, and he said, I'm going to take you in Japan. I'm going to let you see what you've been fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
So he took us into, that's what he done, he took us into to Japan, and so we gathered up all the weapons that they had over there, and I don't know what they done with them. I suppose they probably put them on a ship and took them out and dumped them in the mm-hmm. ocean someplace. But
so how would you gather them up? Just go around the city and?
Well, they turned them in. They supposed to turn them in certain places, you know.
Okay.
And then we would gather them up in my truck, and then we took them and dump them on a ship, put mm-hmm. them on a ship. So. Yeah, and I hauled supplies all the way from the ship up to camp, you know, for the GIs, food and blankets and things like that. It's cold up there.
Mm-hmm.
It snowed in up there. My time, well, we went in there in September. In October, it snowed, and I never seen the ground by the time I left there in the spring.
Really?
Yeah, and it snowed so deep that streetcars couldn't run anymore, you know, it's so deep there.
Mm-hmm.
But when I left there, there's still ice and snow on the ground. And I went down to Tokyo and I spent about 6 months or so down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I hauled supplies out of Yokohama, too. And And I like to drive in the truck because I got to see a lot of country.
Yeah.
I even hauled supplies up to Mount Fuji to the officer's camp up there where the big brass guys stayed.
Yes, it was a little nicer than yes. where you stayed.
Yes, it was quite a little bit nicer.
Did you have much contact with Japanese people?
Yes, I had contact with them all the time mm-hmm. over there. They, Japanese people, they haul their garbage off. And I had a Japanese boy that would shine my shoes, wash my clothes, bring my clothes back, you know, and I would pay him some money to do that for me, you know. But he, real good to him, little, about a 14, 15-year-old boy, you know. And, mm-hmm. And yeah, and he'd do anything that you ask him to do, you know, and to help you do whatever you want to do. And, mm-hmm. and if I wanted him to go to town with me to buy something or another, camera or watch or anything like that, but he'd always, you know, he knew his way around, and he'd always help you do things. Mm-hmm. So
did you buy some souvenirs or things to bring home?
I didn't buy very many souvenirs. Whenever I took in those prisoners,
yeah,
I took in a lot of souvenirs.
Okay, I wondered what kind yeah. of souvenirs would that have been, like knives or?
Yes, I have a picture of them in my book. And I'll let you look at this book, but yeah, I tuck in a saber, a long saber, and mm-hmm. then I tuck in a Harakiri knife from the Japanese. A pair of binoculars, I had a .22 caliber pistol I tuck off of them, and I don't remember, just some money, you know, that they have, just I kept some of that for souvenirs, and mm-hmm. and few things like that. So.
And then were you allowed to bring those things home?
Yes, I was allowed to bring those things home. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what is, describe a Harakiri knife to me.
Harakiri knife? Well, it's a long knife. It's this is a picture of it right there, and it's a long knife.
Okay.
And it has a long blade onto it, and they officers would even kill other soldiers if they before they surrender, you know,
mm-hmm.
and or they would kill themselves before they surrender.
Okay.
But they'd just stick a knife in them and shove them over a cliff.
So did everyone was issued a knife like this?
No, just the officers were issued those knives. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
The Japanese officers.
Right.
Yeah, and they would use those to, and those Japanese all on that one cliff over there, I can't recall the name of it now, but. It even turned the ocean red from the blood that went over that, where they would stab him and shove him off that cliff, you know, mm-hmm. to commit suicide, you know.
Rather than
surrender, yeah.
To the United
yeah,
States.
Yeah, and that was on Okinawa,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
What did you think about that?
Well, it's terrible, but you know, they had those guys brainwashed.
Mm-hmm.
They had them brainwashed to make them think that, you know, they was going someplace where they'd be, have all kinds of things to eat and women and mm-hmm. food and anything that they wanted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They had them brainwashed. And that's why that they, even the suicide planes, you know, that they,
yeah.
And my uncle went down on a ship because his ship sunk with a suicide plane,
mm-hmm.
and there was only 15 of them got off of there, and the rest of them all went down with that ship because mm-hmm. it sunk so quick. But and that was off Saipan, between Saipan and Okinawa. But there's a lot of ships that were damaged. In fact, I seen one that was a suicide plane come down and hit a ship
mm-hmm.
While it was on Saipan, and it's just those guys. They wouldn't surrender for nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. They just wouldn't, and we knew that. And so we had to just do what we could to keep from getting killed.
Mm-hmm.
Just anything we could do, that's what we done. But those, I took those knives off the officer. I took in an officer. I don't remember now how big an officer he was, but he surrendered in the Philippines there, and that's mm-hmm. where I got those knives
mm-hmm.
in the Philippines. Yeah, they let me keep them. I turned them in while I was in camp because they didn't want you may get somebody mad at you, you know,
right.
and get in trouble that way, you know. So we turned them in a supply company, and then whenever we got ready to leave, well, we brought them out,
mm-hmm.
brought them home in my duffel bag.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
No longer do they let you do that, do they?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And my grandson took those at sermon to show and tell to school one time.
Oh, can't do that
can't
anymore.
Can't do that anymore. No, I can't do that anymore.
You've really got this well organized.
Yes, that's my real book, and this one right here is just a short version of that.
Well, that's great that you did that.
Yeah, my wife done practically all that work on it, you know, but I did write my personal story in there.
Good for you.
And I'm going to give you a copy of that.
Okay, good. Good.
I have it right here. This is it right here.
Okay.
But it's, I'll tell you, it took me a long time to write that.
Oh, I bet it.
I finally decided I would, and you know, I'd break down and I couldn't write.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd go off and maybe a day or two and come back and I'd write a little bit more. And then she would type it up when I got it written up, you know. But it, I suppose it probably took me 10 months to write 10 pages.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think so. It didn't take so long because one summer we wanted that for family history for going down to our reunion.
Yeah, but I started writing that long before that.
Yeah.
Now, is this the Saber?
Yes, that's the Saber.
So it was quite long.
Oh, yes, it was. Yes, it was. Yeah.
But we've given them to our grandsons.
Oh, well, sure.
Yeah.
You know?
We thought they'd enjoy it. Well, we could enjoy watching them enjoy
That's
it.
Right, yeah. And
I took pictures of them.
I had a grandson that was in the Marines. Mm-hmm. I gave him the Harry Carey knife and I have a grandson's highway patrol in Wichita.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave him the Saber.
Okay.
And had another grandson that joined the Army and he, so I gave him some other things that I had too for souvenirs, mm-hmm. pair of binoculars and some other things. I had more grandsons than what I have souvenirs for. But I have a grandson now that's in Iraq.
Oh.
And he's coming home, we hope, the last of this month.
Goodness,
last
yes.
this month.
Mm-hmm.
He's over there at MP with a dog.
Yeah, he's
dog. Okay.
He's in the Marines, mm-hmm. military police. Has a dog and
where is he in Iraq or do you know?
By a little town or a town of Ramallah.
Okay.
Right close by Baghdad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll bet you're thinking every day.
Oh yeah, we sure are.
Well, he says that they have a $10,000 bounty on the dog guys over there.
Mm-hmm.
So he's trying to be real careful.
Yeah. Well now you said your uncle was in the service.
Yes.
So you had a tradition in your family. Had your father, grandfather?
Oh, no, not my father or my grandfather, but I was in the World War II in the Pacific. I had my brother in Germany mm-hmm. during World War II. Then my brother was younger than him and went to Vietnam during that war.
Okay.
Well, his uncle was just a few years older than you were anyway. Uncle Alvin was
just uncle was a few years older than I was. He was in that Pacific too,
right.
And he went down on a ship in the Navy, but he's in the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And then my son was in the Army. He went to the Panama conflict while he was in the Army.
Okay.
And then my grandson was in the Marines for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't in any conflict.
No.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But he was a computer specialist.
Mm-hmm.
And they flew him around he was a firewall specialist to program the computers, government computers, so that the hackers couldn't hack in.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And that's what he'd done. And they flew him to all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I couldn't name all the places he went to, but he went all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd fix the government computers so that they couldn't be hacked into.
Yeah.
And so after he served 8 years in that, he got out of that and he got out of the Marines and he got a good job
mm-hmm.
Doing the same thing, only it's under a private contractor now.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then his brother joined the Marines in the military police that's over there now. And then I had another grandson that was over in Iraq for a year over there, and he got a Purple Heart there too,
mm-hmm.
and he got shot with a 2-inch gash out up here by his forehead.
Mm.
And then he got shot in the back but his flap jacket stopped that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he got wounded twice over there. But he came home he has a wife and 3 kids.
Yeah.
And he's at Fort Knox now, mm-hmm. Kentucky. But he signed up for another term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. He signed up while he's over in Iraq.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And have another grandson that's in Fort Sill, Lawton, Oklahoma,
mm-hmm.
down there.
Yeah. Went to Officer's Candidate School, come out a lieutenant.
So. Yeah, he's the lieutenant now. So, okay. Yeah, and he'll probably make a career out of that too. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I've had a lot of, and you know.
Well, yeah, a lot of military tradition.
Well,
yeah.
I went back to our genealogy and went back and found several of his relatives from back on back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the Civil War and the just different wars.
Right.
I don't have much history on them, but I just know that they've been there and, you know, mm-hmm. just to remember. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we need to bring you home. So you were in occupied Japan, and mm-hmm. when then did you get to come home and out of the Army?
Well, I came home. I came home on a ship to Oakland, California.
Mm-hmm. San Francisco, wasn't it?
Well, it's San Francisco Bay.
Right.
Right around Oakland there, anyway. And then I went to Camp Beale, California.
Mm-hmm.
So they discharged me there in Camp Beale, California. Gave me my discharge. Put me on a troop train to send me home, back to Kansas. And so I got back home at Kansas. And
when was this?
This was...
22nd of November when you got back.
Yeah. In 40...
1946.
46. Okay.
When you discharged, that was your discharge.
Yeah, 22nd okay. November 1946.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I got back home. And
did you know what you were going to do when you came home?
No, I really didn't. I've always heard that, you know, if you go to war, that the government's supposed to guarantee you a job when you come back. But I didn't have a job when I come back because mm-hmm. I'd worked for a farmer, and he wouldn't do anything in the winter months, you know, at that time. So I really didn't have a job. But I went to work at Meade. That's the way it was when I come back. And Vera and I got married a short time after that.
You went to work for Lehman and Cimarron and then moved to Meade, I think is where
it was. No, it's the other way around. I went to Meade to work for Marvin Lehman at Meade as a salesman in the appliance and Ford and Ferguson Tractor Company mm-hmm. down there. And I went to work as a mechanic down there. And then after I worked there for a while, then I got transferred to Cimarron. He'd come to Cimarron there for a while.
Okay.
And worked there for a while. Then I went out on a farm at Montezuma and, mm-hmm. and worked for a farmer out there, and then I started farming for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And farmed for myself for about 28, 29 years, something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, well, I've got some questions.
Okay.
I might have to put in another tape.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Well, you were doing so well there, and those stories were absolutely riveting. When you left the United States on the ship,
mm-hmm.
what did you think?
Well, you know, I'm not much of a person for water, you know, mm-hmm. to be out on water. And I thought, you get out there and you can't see land, you can't see nothing, you know. And I thought, why if this ship sinks out there?
Mm-hmm.
And we had a torpedo alert out in the ocean there. And I can't remember just where was that, how many days was out, but we had a torpedo alert. And of course we were all up on deck, and they had all these lifeboats up there. We had a station we'd signed to, but I think I was that station, but I think everybody else was there too, the way it looked, you know. I said, there's not enough lifeboats for everybody here. We're going to have to fight for our lives right here. I could see that right away if something happened. Of course they turned out all the lights, shut down the engine. And then they had these boats that had these, what they call them, patrol boats anyway. They were circling our ship and rolling off big chargers to break up that submarine. The submarine's what was down there. There was,
mm-hmm.
And so that they'd go off, they'd shoot water up there, you know, about 50 foot in the air. And nobody could smoke or couldn't light up anything, you know, and the lights were all out, and it's just dark out there, and all you could see is just these boats go out there, and, you know, and that big old spray of water came up. And we had these life jackets, what they call May West life jackets.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that, you know, if that boat is hit, that we have to get off of that right away before it sinks. But when you have to hold your hands just a certain way, when you jump off that, because you're jumping down about 25, 30 feet, you know, to water.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't, then life jackets, water come up underneath it, you know, and break your neck.
Oh.
So you'll die that way. And I thought, well, how am I going to get all this?
That's a lot of things to remember.
Yes, it is. Going to have to, if I make it, we're still going to have to fight for a lifeboat.
That's right.
Or if I break my neck, I won't have to worry about it.
That's right. But the torpedo did not hit.
No, the torpedo didn't hit.
Okay.
And so after a while, they give us a clear signal. So they started up the boats and electricity, or started up the engine, you know, that generates electricity and everything. And we had lights on and we went on.
Were you in a convoy of ships or was
Well, yes, we, they were more than one us, but they were, I suppose probably